Good morning, my friends, foes, and woes. How's everybody doing? Welcome to the Strange Cryptids and or Other Mysteries. Today, I'm going to be going over 10 mysteries. They're older mysteries that probably will never be solved. I don't know. I go over these, the people email right into me, and this is a list that I've checked out that it's really.
Now you see that evil will always triumph because good is dumb.
I'm just kidding. How's everybody doing? It is Saturday. Welcome to episode, what is this, 10? I need to get my episodes down. How's everybody doing today? Please feel free to call in. I love when people call in. Tell me your mysteries. Tell me what's going on. I always love hearing from people. The Podbean world is a wonderful world. I always like to, talk to my Podbean friends. Great people. So today, Sarah's not joining us. Today I'm going to be going just into 10 stories that we'll probably never solve. But all the same, they're pretty cool. Also, if you guys have anything that you would like about that would make the show better for you guys, please, please, please leave comments. Hear from my fans about what, if anything, if you guys like something that can make this better for you guys. I love having people on here, so definitely always feel free to call in. Me and Lincoln, the dog or not, we are always hanging out. Lincoln, he likes to hit my buttons. He's kind of one of those. Oh, thank you, Lincoln. Hey, thank you. Thank you all. I really appreciate it. Thank you
so much.
You're the best. Really.
So let's get into this. 10 creepy old mysteries we will probably never solve. There are plenty of old mysteries out there that we will almost assuredly never solve. It's not that we don't want to or anything. It's just that in many cases, notable old mysteries and creepy, long-forgotten, unexplained events simply happened too far in the past for us to investigate properly. With events decades or centuries old, we can't interview witnesses and get to the bottom of strange happenings. So many of history's mysteries are best left to wonder about and hypothesize over without truly knowing any answers. It's a bit fun in that way, really, isn't it? I mean, sure, we'd like to know how the past mysteries actually happened, but wondering about the possibilities makes for fun debates and discussions with friends. But that is also not to be said that let's not make some of these new mysteries old mysteries and try to find out why these new mysteries are popping up. Let's not make them... old mysteries that we can't maybe figure out. So it's important to listen to the new ones. I like hearing about the new ones anyway. The new cryptid ones are the ones that are... It's almost like we're making them into existence out of our own heads. Now, that is a topic for another episode. Or if you guys have anything to add to that, please call in and let me know. And that's what we are today. In this list, we'll take a look at 10 mysteries that will almost certainly never be solved, from the paranormal to the bizarre and unsettling to the just plain creepy. These mysteries have no known answer, and they probably never will, unless you feel like jumping in after reading this list and doing a little at-home detective work for yourself, that is, in which I like to do on my own. Number 10, the Circleville Letters, 1977. It all began in the summer of 1977 when a woman in the small town of Circleville, Ohio, received an anonymous letter in the mail. She opened it and discovered bizarre, crudely scrawled handwriting. The letter told her that some unnamed person had been observing her house and knew that she had kids. Furthermore, the letter writer knew something no one else did, that she was having an affair with the local school superintendent. Alarmed, the woman rightly felt fear that somebody was watching her and keeping a close eye on her family. But things would get only so much worse from there. Several weeks later, the letter writer mailed another letter to the woman's husband. The writer informed him of the affair and encouraged the husband to kill both his wife and the school administrator. Wow. Who was cheating? After 2 weeks and no action taken, the letter writer fired off yet another anonymous piece of mail to the husband, goading him to take action. Enraged, the husband grabbed a gun and jumped into the car, telling witnesses that he was going to kill the letter writer, implying he knew the person's identity. But while driving in a furious rush to confront whoever was writing the letters, the man died in a terrible one-car accident. Go figure, you know. I'm just saying. I mean, really, you know, it's not, I don't know, that's just horrible. I don't know, for years after, the letters kept coming. And they didn't just come to the woman who got the first one either. Dozens and dozens of Circleville residents received letters for nearly the next two decades. Shockingly, the letters contained personal information about themselves, which people had no idea how this random stranger had learned about. The letters also contained wild accusations and specific violent threats, too. That got the cops involved. However, they were never able to figure out what was going on. To this day, the letter writer and their motives for turning Circleville upside down both remain a complete mystery. Huh. Well, I gotta say, don't do anything that you wouldn't do, you know? In other words, stay honest. You never know who's out there. Just kidding. But really, I mean, I don't know. I've heard about that one before, and it's a mystery that's never been unsolved. Let's go to the next one. 9, the Lead Masks case, 1966. On August 20th, 1966, a young boy flying a kite on a remote and tough-to-access hill outside Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, found the bodies of two men. He ran down the hill and reported the findings to the cops, but because of the treacherous terrain, coroners and first responders weren't able to get up the hill to recover the bodies until the next day. When the police and firefighters did arrive, they found a very strange scene. Two men were lying next to each other and partially covered by grass. The weird part was that each deceased man wore a formal suit, a waterproof coat, and a lead eye mask. There was no feasible reason for them to be wearing the waterproof coat or the lead eye mask up on the hill, and cops were quickly very confused. Huh. Well, don't wear those. I'm just kidding. Lincoln, what do you think, man? What do you... Oh, yeah. Lincoln, it'll be okay. You're fine. Don't press that button yet. Oh. But you don't think it's true, Lincoln? Lincoln is one of our head people on To No Avail Astronomy podcast. You guys haven't listened, check it out. Anyway, moving on. Alongside the two corpses was an empty water bottle and a packet of two wet towels inside. Then, most cryptically, There was a small notebook that had a set of timed instructions written inside in Portuguese. The instructions' rough translation into English was 16:30, be at the specified location. 18:30, capsules. After the effect, protect metals, await, signal mask. That makes total sense. That creeped out investigators even further, of course. The two men were eventually identified as two Brazilian electronic technicians named Manuel Pereira de Cruz and Miguel Jose Viana. They had been last seen by their families 3 days prior to the boy finding their bodies on the hillside. But while a coroner's report might have actually allowed authorities to come up with some answers in the case, it never came through, at least not in time. The coroner's office in Rio de Janeiro was very backed up with cases and medical exams at the time, so the bodies sat for days on end, waiting to be autopsied. By the time the coroner was finally able to get around to it, their organs were totally badly decomposed to figure out whether the men had ingested any notable substances prior to their deaths. Since then, the discovery has been a bizarre and persistent mystery. Wow. Oh. That one's left for one to be sort of... Oh, man, I don't know. Number 8, the Green Children of Woolpit, 1100. Wow, so this goes far, a little farther back. At some long-forgotten point in the middle of the 12th century, two young children with green-tinted skin suddenly appeared out of nowhere in the tiny village of Woolpit in Suffolk, England. The duo was determined to be brother and sister based on their resemblance of ages. They spoke in a bizarre, unknown language that Woolpit residents couldn't understand. Most unusual, though, was that their skin was tinted green and gave off a very unsettling appearance. And they would only eat raw, broad beans when prompted to take food. Even more bizarrely, they had entered the village from somewhere completely unobserved, and nobody knew from where they came and what their lives had been like before they showed up. Over time, the villagers tried to get the pair to settle into a new life. Sadly, the boy died soon after he reached the village. He had been sickly, and he wasn't long for this world, no matter what the villagers could offer him. The girl was eventually nursed back to health, full health, though, as she got better, she lost the green tint to her skin. That is weird. In time, she was baptized. And she even learned to speak English. As the legend goes, upon learning English, she reportedly told villagers that she had come from a land where the sun never shone. The earth was covered in permanent twilight, and everything there was green. According to one report from the time, she claimed that the place was called St. Martin's Land. Huh. Obviously, there's a lot to be skeptical about with that story. For one, it happened nearly 1,000 years ago, so there's no way we can really get any reliable information than the reports that came out from the long time ago, from that long ago. Plus, historians aren't even completely sure when it happened, so that's all the same. It's documented, and that documents. Don't really necessarily lie. But a lot of new things can come facts and be brought up people's head, you know, change stories change. But all the same, it is a documented story. But experts know it was the 12th century without a doubt, and they think it was during King Stephen's reign, which lasted from 1135 to 1154. But they aren't even 100% sure on that part. So we will pretty clearly never know the real story behind the Green Children of Woolpit, except for that's a shame because it makes for an incredible creepy tale. And that would be pretty, I don't know, man. I mean, I think anything's possible myself, and I think that I think that just because we don't see things at different dimensions and stuff like that, I'm pretty sure that just because three-dimensional things aren't, I think that more dimensions are right in our face in existence. I really do. But moving on to number 7, the Mary Celeste, 1872. On December 4th, 1872, travelers in the Atlantic Ocean, just off the coast of the Azores, a few hundred miles west of Portugal, came across the Mary Celeste. The Mary Celeste was a Canadian-built ship that was owned and registered by an American merchant firm. It had been filled with a valuable cargo and was supposed to be on its way to Europe at the time. About a month before, on November 7th, the ship had left New York City with a plan to go to Genoa, Italy. It had a full stock of alcohol, can't go wrong there, that it was still going to drop off. Where did it go? Hang on, excuse me, sorry. Been filled with valuable cargo and supposed to be on its way to Europe at the time. About a month before, on November 7th, the ship had left New York City with a plan to go to Genoa, Italy. It had a full stock of alcohol that was going to be dropped off at Genoa, expensive provisions that were still in the ship when the Canadian Brigantine De Gratia found the Mary Celeste floating off the Azores. The creepy part was that when the Dea Gratia came up to it, they found absolutely no human activity on board, and the Mary Celeste was completely blank. The alcohol stocks were full, and the crew provisions were equally full as well, suggesting nobody was starving to death or anything like that. Furthermore, all the crew's personal belongings on the Mary Celeste were left completely undisturbed. But the crewmen, who were supposed to be working the ship, were nowhere to be found. Every last one of them was missing, having vanished without a trace. The ship's log didn't give further clues, and with its last entry having come 10 days earlier, nothing was found. It was even more bizarre that the ship was still seaworthy and still floating just fine. It had been under partial sail when the Dea Gratia was found it, and interestingly, its lifeboat was missing. Which does that kind of not give you a little bit of a sign? I don't know. Maybe I'm the dumb one. I don't know. But with nothing else gone and the ship showing no signs of having been battered with about in a storm, what could have happened? The men who had crawled up the New York to work on that fateful voyage in the Mary Celeste were never heard from again, and nobody knows what happened. Was it a mutiny, piracy, an insurance scam by the ship's owners seeking to salvage its goods and needing to kill the crew to make it happen? The mystery will likely live on forever. That'd be a good one to get more into. I try to find just the cliff notes for everybody, so it's totally bored with too much information. But moving on to number 6, the Flannan Isle Lighthouse Mystery, 1900. On December 15th, 1900, a steamship named Arcturus, on its way from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to Leith, Scotland, noted that a lighthouse that was supposed to be operational on Scotland's Sarflung Flannan Isles was not in good working condition during a rough storm. 3 days later, when the Arctur docked in Leith, they reported the bad lighthouse situation in the Northern Lighthouse Board. Immediately, the board sent a relief ship out to the remote Scottish Isle to figure out what was going on. Due to the adverse weather, though, the relief ship did not reach the lighthouse until nearly 10 days later, on December 26. Once there, they expected to find three men working at the lighthouse, James Ducat, Thomas Marshall, and Donald MacArthur, as they were tasked to do this at the time. But when the ship's relief ship's men came up to the lighthouse at noon on December 26, they couldn't find anyone of the three men anywhere around the island. The mystery was unsettling from the start. For one, the lighthouse's flagstaff had no flag. None of the lighthouse's provisions boxes were left on the landing stage to restock, as they should have been. And the relief ship's men could find no sign of the lighthouse three-person crew anywhere nearby. When the relief men reached the compound itself, they found the entrance gate closed and the beds outside unmade, and the rest room's clock was unwound. They found lamps that had been cleaned and refilled but sitting harmlessly inside. Wherever the lighthouse's vanished staffers had gone, they had thought to take the lamps with them. They hadn't thought to take the lamps with them. No sign of the three keepers was ever found beyond that discovery, and their bodies never washed on shore and were otherwise discovered either. It's unclear what happened to the men to this day, despite several different theories included opinions that could have set out their own life, a new life, or possibly been met with some unforeseen tragedy that swept them into the ocean. Their whereabouts are completely unknown and have never been found. Oh. That has always posed a problem when, you know, you always wonder what the hell could have happened to people when things. Know what I'm saying?
You know what I mean? Because I'm pretty sure.
I know, yeah.
Oh, man.
Oops. Lincoln, man. Come on, bub. Come on, buddy. All right, let's go to the next story. Patamsky Crater, 1949. Strange object in Siberia emitting radiation. Mysterious egg in the center. In 1949, a Russian geologist named Vadim Kolpakov discovered a massive and extremely bizarre crater located in a rural part of southeastern Siberia, not far from Lake Baikal. This rock formation has come to be known as the Patamsky Crater, and even though it's a massive and completely unique to the area, geologists and other scientists have no idea how it got there. The crater is basically a very large mound made up of shattered limestone blocks. It sits on the slopes of Russia's Patam Highlands within the nation park's Irkutsk region. At its base, the crater diameter is about 520 feet or 158.5 meters. And its offshoots are more than 40 feet, 12 meters high. In the center of the crater is a cone with a ring-shaped crown. At the height of that smaller mound is nearly just as tall as the crater's outside walls. The entire thing is absolutely massive, with its inside volume estimated to be well over 8 million cubic feet, or 226,534 cubic meters. and its weight tabbed at approximately 1 million tons. Wow. Yet, despite being so big and so unbelievably out of place relative to the rest of the surroundings, nobody knows how it got there or from where it came. There are theories, of course, with the leading one being that it was a meteorite that landed on Earth in a flourish. Others claim it came about from volcanic activity, or even it caused by a deep pocket of unusual natural gas flow. The most vocal theorists believe the Patuxent Crater is an offshoot fragment from the same meteorite that landed in nearby Tunguska in the early 20th century. But if that were the case, the crater's determined age wouldn't match up. Science has found it is about 300 years old and not roughly 40 like the Tunguska at the time that Patuxent was discovered. Regardless, whatever event caused the Patuxent crater is completely unknown still to this day. Scientists continue to observe it and see if they can learn any more about it. But so far, no dice. Huh. That's something I want to look more into. In other episodes, I probably will be diving into more of these. That's something I really like to do, especially with the show. Number four, the disappearance of Flight 19 in 1945. On December 5th, 1945, five Avenger torpedo bombers flying in for the U.S. Navy as Flight 19 on a mission just off the coast of Florida completely disappeared and were never heard from again.
That could be a problem.
I mean, you know. The five bombers had been sent out on a training flight from Naval Air Station Fort Lauderdale in South Florida. At some point in the flight, though, the main navigator in the first plane became disoriented as to where the group was going, and they lost track of their direction and heading back to their mainland. Oh, don't do that, Lincoln. Tragically, the planes were never seen again, and all 14 men who were flying as part of the crew on those five planes that day were lost forever. To make matters even worse, a Martin PBM Mariner flying boat was dispatched to go search for the men on a recovery mission. And it, too, the plane, was lost along with the 13 crew members during the search flight for Flight 19. So the plane looking for him ended up missing, too. That's always never good. Which adds to the mystery way, 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 way more. There have been many theories about what happened to Flight 19. Some say the tricky situation in the Bermuda Triangle was the thing that caused those planes to disappear. Others say they were attacked and swooped up by aliens or other even more fanciful and frankly ridiculous theories. I don't think that's ridiculous. I think that is a very, 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 very possible. Yeah, me too. Thank you, Lincoln. Yep. That is very much a possibility. I do believe in aliens. But I won't get into it. The most common and sensible prevailing story is that the flight leader, Lieutenant Charles C. Taylor, struggled to navigate after his compass stopped working. Then he mistakenly thought a series of small offshore islands east of land was the Florida Keys to the south. So he continued heading out over the open sea and away from land. As for the PBM search aircraft, the Navy officials believed. I hate when it does that. Uh, Wait a minute, where did I go? Then he mistakenly thought a series of small offshore islands east of the land of the Florida Keys to the south, so he continued heading out over the open sea and away from land. As for the PBM search aircraft, the Navy officials believe it was lost in an explosion in midair that occurred while it was searching. What are the odds of that? I'm just saying. I mean, that was a pigeon. I mean, really. Of course, the strange thing about it all is that it's that no parts of the airplane wreckage or anything else were ever found. Nothing washed ashore, no wreckage or remains were ever uncovered, and nobody has any idea where or even if the planes and the men who died inside them are somewhere at the bottom of the ocean. The actual fate of the crews involved in and the specific timeline of events regarding what happened that day will likely forever remain a mystery. Man. Well, all right. Please don't go anywhere. I've got to take a small break. I'm at the bottom of the hour, so I will leave you with this while I'm on my break.
Although UFO and alien enthusiasts have often been quick to proclaim that such sightings and encounters are evidence of extraterrestrial life visiting from faraway planets, so
leave you with this. Kartik. What's up, man? Hey, if you have any questions, let me know. Or if you have any stories, feel free to call in. Definitely hit like and follow if you have if you haven't yet. Definitely helps the channel. I appreciate you joining. So, there's a little bit of, I like him. He's in him. He comes on. He likes to come on and tell his, some of his mystery stories. They're pretty cool. I like them. Now, moving on to ours, number three. The Max Headroom broadcast signal intrusion of 1987. Now, I remember this one. This was pretty, it's actually pretty creepy if you look it up, man. It's pretty weird. On the night of November 22nd, 1987, television viewers in Chicago, Illinois were treated to quite a spectacle. An unknown person hijacked two different broadcast signals in the major Midwestern city, and their identity has never still to this day been discovered. First came the short hijacking of a major network. It was the 9 p.m. newscast hour of WGN-TV. The station was in the middle of a sports segment when suddenly a person wearing a Max Headroom mask and swaying erratically in front of a metal panel appeared on screen. There was a loud buzzing sound that accompanied the video hijacking. The interruption lasted only 17 seconds, though, as WGN had engineers actively working that night, and those staffers were able to regain control of their channel and get the screens pointed back to their newscast. 2 hours later, the second and much larger intrusion occurred. It happened on PBS affiliate WTTW during a broadcast of a Doctor Who episode called Horror of Fang Rock. PBS didn't have any engineers on duty at the time, as they were simply running canned shows. So the signal takeover was more sustained, lasting for more than 90 seconds in total. It was actually pretty creepy, man. When the Max Headroom mask figure appeared on screen, he made bizarre references to things like New Coke, the cartoon TV show Clutch Cargo, a local Chicago area sportscaster, and other random topics. Then a woman's hand spanked the mask figure's bare butt with a fly swatter while he yelled, "They're coming to get me." The hijackers then ended the pirated transmission on their own and disappeared away into the night. Whoever was behind the Max Headroom stunt has never been found. The Federal Communications Commission looked into the stunt, but they were never unable, or they were unable to figure out who might have done it, and what their motives were. Now, nearly 40 years on, it's unlikely we will ever know who was behind the shocking and exceedingly random hijacking or hacking. Even if it was a harmless prank, the FCC and major television networks were rightly concerned that other hijackers couldn't use mass broadcasting like that for nefarious purposes. And then the social media came around, and now, well, here we are. Back then, it was a big deal. It was a real big deal. It was really kind of creepy, too. On to the next. The Lost Colony of Greenland of the 1400s. The Norse settled Greenland in about the 10th century, or sometimes earlier. For the next 500-ish years, they kept an active colony on the unforgiving terrain. But then, in the very late 15th century, that colony completely disappeared. All the people in it left behind a good deal of their supplies and other things, as though they just vanished into the thin air. Now, well over 500 years after the colony's complete loss, historians and archaeologists are still at the standstill over why it happened and what became of the people who lived there. There are many competing theories as to why the lost colony of Greenland became, well, lost. Some believe environmental changes made their life harder, forcing people to flee. Others think local Inuit and other indigenous populations raided the colony to such a great degree that people were murdered and taken prisoner. Others think that it is a lack of support over time from European Norsemen frustrated the colonists, who then set out looking for a new life elsewhere. A late 15th century plague that swept through Iceland and Norway is even thought to be a cause, as it left many farms and homesteads available for the taking and could have inspired colonists to return home and settle down. The most bizarre part of the entire mystery is that people seem to have left the colony in a very orderly, measured fashion. If Inuit raids were to blame for the disappearance, the colony itself would have been left a trashed and messy disaster when Viking sailors later came upon it to discover it had been deserted. It wasn't trashed, though, and no current-day archaeological evidence from these ancient farm sites indicates any sign of attack. Starvation is thought to be unlikely as well. Were the colonists impoverished to the point that they simply wanted to flee for better land further south? Do they grow weary of the difficult world of living in Greenland? It's been so many centuries now, and we will almost certainly never really know the answer. And I will look that one up a little bit as well. And we come to the last, the Dancing Plague of 1518. In July 1518, a woman named Fra Trofia reportedly began dancing uncontrollably in the city of Strasbourg, Alsace, in what is now modern-day France. She took to the streets and 4 days on end never stopped dancing. There were no apparent motive behind her dancing, at least none that people could readily figure out. Before too long, other people started joining her in the streets doing their dances, too. In total, the dancing situation ended up turning into a very notable and very strange event of mass hysteria. Based on records documenting the situation, historians today estimated that anywhere between 50 and 400 people, took part in the dancing plague. And it lasted for weeks on end. There's obviously plenty of confusion regarding why this plague occurred and why Fra Trofia ever was compelled to dance in such a way for so long. The most common theory is that it was the manifestation of some sort of stress-induced mass hysteria. Other competing theories, including things like the population suffering from ergotism caused by fungi present in the rye they farmed and used for sustenance. Some even question whether there was a religious explanation for all the dancing. In the end, some historians have found documents claiming that dozens or even hundreds of people may have died from exhaustion after weeks of endless dancing. Whatever the case may be, the dance plague of 1518 remains one of the strangest human-centered phenomena ever recorded. While it was almost certainly some of the form of mass hysteria or mass psychosis, and not just like aliens forcing them to dance, the exact cause of the reason behind this plague and its beginnings will likely never be known. There you have it. There's 10 mysteries that will probably never be explained. So I'm gonna go in and let my friend do some of the. Me and him are gonna do some of these mysteries. They're pretty cool. These are more about some of the. Cryptids and stuff like that. Don't go anywhere. These are pretty good. there you have it, guys. I hope you enjoyed the episode. I had fun, you guys. I always love you, Non-Energy. I love doing these shows. They're great. They really are. You guys are wonderful.
Thank you so much.
You guys have a wonderful weekend.
And we will be
doing another episode, probably maybe later tonight. I think I've got some friends that are coming on, so don't miss tonight. If you have not, hit follow, hit like, leave comments for anything that you might want. I love hearing what you guys might think and anything to make the show better. I appreciate it, you guys, and I will
talk to you guys very soon. Have a good night.
And thank you for joining Stories of Cryptids and or Other